So if we turn over to Revelation chapter 9, we go into this news analysis and just remind ourselves of a few of these scriptures that we know so well, and yet when we go through the news and we highlight certain things, we need to be aware that so many times people out in the world would never really make a huge amount of significance, or would never recognize the huge amount of significance in many of the things that we would highlight. But here in Revelation 9, and down in verse 16, it says, "The number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000,000, so that's 200 million. And the direction that this huge army that is coming through eventually to this Battle of Armageddon, the direction in which it's coming from, if you notice in verse 14, it says, "Saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates." So this army is coming from the east of Euphrates, because you tend to look from Jerusalem, looking to whichever areas are being highlighted. So from Jerusalem, you're looking to Euphrates, the angels were binding them, were actually stopping them from coming, and it was then releasing this huge army across. If we turn over again to chapter 13, we find something else. So we were looking, obviously, at people or the emergence of some kind of power towards the Far East in an amalgamation. It's going to have to be an amalgamation, presumably, of nations, something like India, China, and also Russia as well. But there's other things as well. Here in Revelation 13, we notice here in verse 16, it says, "And he caused all, small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hands or their forehead." In other words, in what they were working and thinking about. And it says, "That no man might buy or sell, except that he had this mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name." So it was a case of commerce is going to be affected. So we're looking at the domination of commerce, the domination of the economy. The economy is going to play a major role when we're looking at Europe and the emerging European power. Over in Revelation 17, if you turn over a few pages there, in Revelation chapter 17, and we notice here in Revelation 17, in verse 8, it says, "And the beast that you saw was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is." So here, whatever this is that's coming as the final power, and it says here in verse 14, these 10 kings, as it's mentioning, will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for his Lord of Lords and King of Kings. So this final block of power in the area at this particular time isn't just a recent sudden emergence of something. It is something that was in the past, and yet was not, and yet is. In other words, you're looking at the medieval Roman Empire. You're looking at an empire which stretches right the way back into in Roman times. And this is why we look at this particular when we're looking at the newspapers and we find articles about Europe, this is why this becomes very, very important, because you're looking at the Austro-Hungarian Empire that was there, and certainly it fits in with the various beasts of Daniel as well. Turn over to Daniel 7, and we'll just finish off here, just to remind ourselves as we go into the news analysis why we're looking at the things that we're looking at. But here in Daniel 7, this particular Roman Empire that is clearly highlighted here, it has a certain characteristic. And here in verse 17 it says, "These great beasts which are four kings that will arise in the earth, and the saints of the Most High will take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, for even forever and ever." So we're looking again, we see these 10 kings in Revelation. These were going to go right through until the return of Christ, and Christ will overcome them. And he says, "I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was different from the others." So in sequential terms, you're looking now at the Roman Empire. "Exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were iron, nails brass, devoured, broke in pieces, stamped the residue with his feet." So it is a fascist type of government. It's a beast. It's a Gentile kind of government. We're looking at the government, or the various instruments being laid down within the current world that would give rise to this kind of attitude of mind, this kind of frame of mind. And when we're looking at these things, and I just clipped it out from this last week, I just decided to try and limit it to this last week alone, but there was a number of articles that appeared. This one is from the Wednesday's paper. It says, China denies the claims of hacking into the Pentagon's computers. It says, a new war of words between Beijing and Washington broke out yesterday after China denied U.S. officials' claims that China's military hackers had broken into its computers, including that of the Defense Secretary, Robert Gates. Officials claimed that part of the U.S. defense computer system had to be shut off for a week in June after the cyber attack, and the attackers were said to have been traced to computer addresses that suggest that they were part of the People's Liberation Army. So again, it is this emerging power that is quite sophisticated, and it is challenging, at this time it is challenging the United States, but as we look into the future we find that no, the United States is not going to be the power that it was, or is at the present time. It's going to be challenging the power that is in this area, which will be a European revived Holy Roman Empire. Another area as well, which is British concerns, it says here, this is from Wednesday's paper, over the Taliban's Chinese arms, a foreign officer's complaint to Beijing after reports that Chinese-made weapons, including anti-aircraft missiles, had reached the hands of the Taliban. So there's another one, again showing the rise and the weaponry as far as China is concerned. We can also see it as far as Russia is concerned. It says the Russian bombers to fire cruise missiles over the Arctic. This is from Tuesday's paper. It says President Vladimir Putin flexed Russia's military muscles once again yesterday when his government said that 12 strategic bombers would practice firing cruise missiles during an exercise over the Arctic. And we're looking again at this east of the Euphrates, east of that area, because they would come down into that area of Iraq and sweep in from northern Russia as well. Another one, again, the final one in this section, RAF jets intercept 8 Russian bombers. It says the RAF carried out its biggest operation to protect British airspace since the Cold War yesterday, when 4 Tornadoes were scrambled to intercept 8 Russian bombers approaching over the Atlantic. An early warning aircraft and VC-10 tanker were also launched to support the British fighters, responding to apparent saber-rattling by the President Vladimir Putin. So we're looking at something going on as far as Mr. Putin is concerned, as far as Russia is concerned, as far as the eastern side is concerned. You're looking at a steady build-up, and there's also, you add to that, other instances where you see China certainly making an awful lot of ships and making an awful lot of waves in that sense in the Pacific. So that's one area that we can look at. Another area, which I mentioned in the update this week, is the economic threat that we have to the world at large. And you, as I go on, and hopefully we'll have the time to read an article at the end, this has a great deal to say to us. But it says here, it says, we will pay for living beyond our means. It says, we know things are bad when the Bank of England puts up interest rates, our mortgages go up, and the cash we have to spend on everything else goes down. So in other words, it's not quite straightforward. It says, but when the bank says rates need not go up, as it did on Thursday, and yet we read that mortgages will still rise, then you know things are really bad indeed. We need not blind ourselves with the technical details of the liquidity crisis enveloping so many financial institutions. A simple observation will suffice to define the root of the problem. We're saving too little, borrowing far, far too much. Not just in Britain, but around the world, we have gone on a spending spree and now all the bills are coming in at once. In a global economy, no one can be entirely shielded from the effects of mass profligacy, but the culture of debt, of what the Victorians used to sternly call living beyond our means, has taken root in Britain and has done so with the full encouragement of the government and of the same financial institutions that are now reeling. So that was one article and analysis that was there. Another article, which I mentioned in the update, this is from yesterday's paper. On the headline, on the paper headline, it says, mortgages set to rise as a crisis grips the markets. And the subhead was, homeowners are facing fresh misery as experts predict mortgage rates will rise as a direct result of the crisis that has gripped the financial markets. But it was inside, in an analysis that was there, where it talks about British house buyers should worry, And it goes on, it says, if you keep no more than a desultory eye on the markets, checking the FTSE 100 or the Dow each morning, but little more, you would not be aware that the world's financial system had a heart attack over the summer, and it's still in emergency care. It is literally that serious. It says, the shocking events of August the 20th have no parallel in modern capitalism. A panic flight to safety caused the yield on 3 months US Treasury notes to plunge at the fastest rate that was ever recorded, outdoing 87 stock market crash and also 9/11. What occurred this time was a near total breakdown of trust in the $2.2 trillion market for US commercial debt, which lubricates daily business. People with a lot of money were even extracting their funds from bank accounts, suddenly deemed risky. The spillover is global, as British house buyers will soon discover. So from what was going on with these subprime loans over in America and the problems that they had there, it spreads like a ripple across the world. It says, the twist in this episode is that $2 trillion of subprime mortgages given to people with poor credit history was chopped and packaged in sausages known as CDOs, and they were then sold, notice, to German, French and Japanese banks and hedge funds everywhere. Now, so what did they do? This was a smart move by the American institutions, is they took the dodgy loans, which they knew they had, they repackaged them and they sold them on to other countries. So they got rid of the problem. They tried to spread the problem. It says, not all banks can count on rescues. Hence the August seizure of the Interbank lending system in America and Europe, causing spreads to balloon to levels not seen since the Russian default. It says, banks stopped lending to fellow banks. They're still lending to pedigree companies, Volkswagen, BP and Total and so on. But it says the European Central Bank has reinvented itself as a liquidity nurse to keep the markets alive, adding another €42 billion of emergency credit yesterday. The Federal Reserve and the Bank of Japan, and finally a token gesture, the Bank of England, have all stepped in. They've stopped the panic, but not the freeze. Half the global credit market is still shut. And each week of this paralysis makes it more likely that the trouble is going to spread to the real world. Now, what that really means is shown actually in another article here. And that is that you find red faces growing, the Fed faces growing pressure for the rate cut. It says pressure is growing on the US Federal Reserve to announce an emergency cut in interest rates after the worst employment data in 4 years sparked fears of a recession. Now, if you drop your interest rates, then it makes money more available. And that, therefore, makes inflation more likely, and it makes the value of that money then go down. The value of the dollar will fall. If you put your interest rates up, then the problem is recession. And it says here, highly anticipated non-farm payroll figures showed the US economy lost 4,000 jobs in August, the first contraction since 2003, and they were expecting a rise of 110,000 jobs. That's been the problem. So we're looking at a financial system. I mean, we saw that actually take place. We saw the problems take place a few weeks ago regarding the economic kind of downturn that occurred, and everything then seemed to stabilize. And it says here that we just read, it said that if you keep no more than a desultory eye on the markets, checking the FTSE 100 or the Dow each morning, you're not going to know what's going on. That's not where the problem is. It's the liquidity. It's the fact that people can't get money. And if businesses can't get money, then businesses go down. That, in my layman's way of understanding it, that's as I understand that is the case. Now, at the same time, and remember, we see that none will be able to buy and sell unless he's got the mark of the beast, so this is an important area. We see that there's an army of 200 million that are going to rise east of the Euphrates, so the saber-rattling by Russian is an important area. We also see, however, that the type of beast that we're looking at is something which is going to stamp on people and is fascist in its nature. This particular, this is from Thursday's paper, and it says, the threat of crime, whether from an individual rapist or a terrorist group, appears to be pushing the country inevitably towards the presumption of guilt. In other words, you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent, and that is a fundamental change in the change in the way our judicial system works. An outstanding example of this trend is yesterday's proposal by an appeal court judge that the DNA profiles of the entire population be kept on the National Criminal Database. So in other words, you're guilty, you've got to have your DNA registered in order to exist. You know, that's basically what is being said. In a BBC interview, Sir Stephen Sedley went even further, suggesting that foreign visitors to Britain should be included as well. Now, it goes on, it shows that the population of 60 million here, you've got over 32 million foreign visitors a year. So you're going to have a database of 90 million. And that is something that obviously people are wondering about. A dozen years ago, another article, it says, a dozen years ago, Britain did not have a criminal DNA database. Notice 12 years ago, there was no DNA database at all. Now it's the largest in the world by far, with 4 million profiles. It was established in 1995, almost on an ad hoc basis, to store the profiles taken from convicted criminals, and there was not even a preliminary legislation to set it up. They did it regardless. And this is what has been happening. It has been without any kind of debate, without any kind of break on the situation. And it goes into this event where this judge is calling for everybody to go ahead and be in this database. Now, they say that, okay, everything's fine because it's going to be handled responsibly and all of the other guarantees that they give. But the fact is that what we're looking at within the UK, and what we're looking at right now, it says Brown forced into U-turn over the EU treaty opt-out. Gordon Brown's attempt to head off calls for a referendum on Europe were in turmoil last night as he was forced into a U-turn over the contents of the new EU trade treaty. With many unions and Labour MPs demanding a national vote because Tony Blair negated on an opt-out of the Charter for Fundamental Rights affecting workers, the government suddenly changed tack, insisting that there was no opt-out after all. In other words, they'd promised an opt-out, but they then have come up with the concept that, well, it's not available. You can't have an opt-out. It's not possible. So what does that mean? And what they then go on, it says, but the move designed to appease the unions ahead of the TUC conference next week failed to have the desired effect. In other words, they are pushing for a referendum. A referendum on an opt-out from the treaty. But the government says, look, there's no opt-out. In other words, Mr Blair has signed up the country into to go in a direction that he cannot get out of. So what do you have to do? You have to pull out of Europe. That is how serious this situation is. They're trying to warn, it says Brown in EU treaty warning to France and Germany, Gordon Brown has issued a warning to the leaders of France and Germany that he will have to call a referendum on the new EU treaty if they force Britain to cede more powers to Brussels. In other words, don't do what you can do. In other words, get everything over to Brussels. Because if you do that, I've got to call a referendum, and therefore we're up a gum tree. It's not going to work. And the difficulty is that when we're looking at what's going on in Germany right now, this then starts to put itself into perspective, because there's an article here on the front of Thursday's paper, and this one, it says Suicide Squad targeted US base, and it goes on here, it says a suicide terrorist plot to ram massive car bombs into Frankfurt's airport and the British biggest US military base in Germany was foiled yesterday. Three Islamic terrorists were under arrest last night, as security experts said that hundreds could have died in the attacks. And the men, two German converts to Islam and a Turk, were said to have collaborated in a plot to detonate several homemade bombs in what would have been one of Europe's most deadly attacks. Now, on the surface, it looks like, oh, well, they stopped the attack, and that's fine. The thing that I found interesting, it's not even mentioned here, is that on the news last night, and they interviewed certain members of the public in Germany, and there was one man there that gave a response which I thought was very interesting. Here is Germany now under threat. It's under threat from terrorism. And they've seen 9/11. They've seen the things that went off 7/7 in London and the various things that have happened around the world. And in this TV interview of this member of the public, he said something along the lines of, I should have actually written it down, I never actually wrote it down, but he said something along the lines of, I agree with all and any measures as long as this gets stopped. In other words, the government can do whatever it wants, but this has got to be stopped, it's got to be stopped now. He was absolutely, completely Germanic in his approach to it, that anything that needs to be ceded to the government so they can have the full powers to do it, this was the intent of everything that he was saying, was all right by him. And this is the problem, that when you have a Germany under threat and under pressure, then you have a different mindset. It is not an Anglo-Saxon mindset, it is a Germanic mindset, and they will give the power into the ones that get the thing sorted. They will not tolerate to live in a conditions, regardless of freedoms. They'll gladly sacrifice freedoms to get the problem sorted. And this is what we've got to understand. The mindset is different from the UK. Now, the interesting article here, this is from Tuesday's paper. It says, the German far-right party builds support by healing rather than heiling. And it says here, in the municipal park of the pretty German port of Strasland, this weekend, 27-year-old Doreen Geisler watched her three children play in a town fair. Among the attractions were free hot dogs, face painting, eggs and spoon races, and a bouncy castle. And amid all the tents and games and shrieking of delights of child toddlers, however, dozens of red and white flags fluttered in the wind, emblazoned with the letters, the NPD. It was their party here in the Baltic home states of Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel, Germany's far-right National Democratic Party, often associated with skinheads and steel-toed boots, is pursuing a softer path to power. Now, I want to just remind you of something that's happened not in Germany, but down in Israel, or rather in Palestine. Who was in power? Who was voted into power down there? It was Hamas. Why were they voted into power? Because they got things done on a social basis, and they helped and assisted the general population. And here we find something along the same lines. It says, there are not many fun opportunities for children here, said Mrs. Geisler, cradling her one-year-old baby Robin. It doesn't matter what this is run by the NPD. What matters is that the children have fun. And the NPD is flourishing in former East Germany and in this region where unemployment hovers at about 20%. Now notice that. Where is it flourishing? Where unemployment is hovering at 20%. So where the unemployment is high, what is the Fed trying to stop over in America at the moment? Unemployment starting to escalate, which is why it's having to drop the interest rates. The danger of dropping the interest rates is the fact that you will then have inflation feeding in and the value of the dollar will start going down through the floor. But this is what happened in the Second World War. You had unemployment, Hitler came to power, and he gave employment to the masses. Unemployment hovers at about 20%. Old industry has yet to find a successor, and young women are leaving in droves. In state elections last September, it won more than 7% of the vote and put 6 members in the regional parliament. At the fair on Sunday, Andrzejewski, I think it is, one of the NPD members elected last autumn, explained the party's agenda. We want Germany, notice, to be inhabited first of all by the German people, he said. We want Germany to be monocultural, not multicultural. We want to stop immigration and reduce the number of foreigners. And he also outlined the NPD's suspicion of the power of big banks and big businesses. Again, make a note of that. It says, in the past, such aims have frequently been seen with the NPD accused of racism and anti-Semitism. But what is against is the power of the banks and the big businesses. What have the banks done? The banks have gone ahead and bought the loans that have been repackaged by American businessmen, and they've been repackaged into Germany, and it has actually, I think it was one of the banks actually went down in Germany, or it was saved. It was saved by an amalgamation, but it would have gone down if it hadn't, other banks hadn't actually stepped in. And when we see the situation, as I say, over in the Palestine, and you see the problems that Hamas, or these problems Israel has with Hamas. Here is a genuinely elected government, and the reason what they were elected is because they offered the social things that were necessary for the people there. You can see exactly the same kind of thing happening within Germany. You can see the same kind of thing happening, and certainly the support for the anti-American stance that would be there, because the problems that would be caused in the unemployment within Germany are going to come from these subprimes being repackaged and shipped across the Atlantic. So when we start looking at some of the things within the newspapers, and that was just from this like past week, it certainly makes interesting reading when you put it together with Scripture. And it's only by having the understanding of Scripture can you really start to understand the news and start to put the pieces into place, because we know the outcome ultimately. And we're looking at this outcome eventually of the very kingdom of God and the things that portrayed within the days that are just coming up within the church calendar in a few days' time.